Welcome to The Atypical Podcast from theatypicallife.com. I am Matt Mooney.
And I'm Jenny Mooney. Here, we take a look at all kinds of things.
We may tell stories, we call them side stories, welcome a friend to join us, or interview someone more widely known and ask them all kinds of questions. And sometimes, yes, sometimes we may just do a little Matt chat, discussing the current happenings of our life.
Through all of it, we hope to give you something atypical as you listen along your typical day.
This week, Jenny and I sat down with Jared Patrick Boyd, the author of Imaginative Prayer, a year-long guide for your child's spiritual formation. Jared is a pastor, spiritual director, a father of four girls, and you can find his website at imaginativeprayer.com. Let's go now to our conversation with Jared Patrick Boyd. Now, where are you today?
Columbus, Ohio.
Okay, Jared, are you a football fan?
You know, I'm in the wrong city to not be a football fan. I'm not really. No.
You're not. And so
no.
So this time of year come. So just so you know, we are in Fayetteville, Arkansas, the home of the wonderful, beautiful Razorbacks. However, Jenny is an Alabama fan, and so this time of year, it used to be fun. But now Alabama's been so good for so long, it's no longer fun for me. So I may be joining your ranks soon. I may just throw in the towel and not care. Football season is kind of a big deal to us. And so, you know, we think less of you already, just from the from the outset. What do you enjoy? What do you like?
You know, I love to read. I like to do a little rock climbing and kind of outdoor stuff. I love being in the woods, in the mountains, which, you know, I'm in the wrong state for that. But I enjoy fly fishing from time to time.
Okay, now we're talking. I mean, I enjoy good fly fishing. I don't climb mountains. I wish I did. If for folks who don't know what you look like, I just need to set the stage. You have a great pair of glasses and a great beard. And so you're everything that I'm not, you know. As we get talking, you'll come across wise, and just know that I aspire to rock climbing, a beard, and just a good set of solid glasses. So props to you. Have you been rock climbing lately? Is that something that you do like periodically or just like almost never now? You have four girls, four daughters.
Yeah, you know, we've got like a man-made outdoor rock wall here a couple miles from our house. So I don't do a ton of it anymore. And I was never into like, you know, really rock climbing, but more so like just hiking and, you know, hiking up, you know, when we go to Colorado, I'll do a lot of hiking. We were just out at Yosemite as a family and that was awesome. It was amazing. Yosemite National Park is fantastic. So,
You mentioned also reading, and so that is something that we share a little love of there, though I don't climb the mountains too often. I do love to read. We do this thing periodically that we would love to do with you today, which is, help me out, Jenny, if I get it wrong.
You know what? Here's the thing. It's a little bit, it's hard for me to say, so I'm going to go ahead and let you say it.
That's why I tossed to you.
Okay.
Yeah. We do a thing called What You Watching, What You Reading,
What You're Rocking.
Good, Jenny. You really came on strong there at the end. So, Jared, we do these kind of rapid fire, and basically it's like you don't have to be loving it, but just it doesn't have to be your favorite. No stress. You know, you can come back and amend these at a later date. But is there anything that you've been reading lately that you've enjoyed putting your nose into?
Oh, man. I've got just a stack of books sitting next to me. I'm reading, I'm really into historic monasticism. That's probably one of the other things I geek out on a little bit. So I'm actually rereading The Rule of St. Benedict. I am reading a book on the life of St. Patrick right now. I'm reading a book called The Way of Humility by a monk in Australia. His name is Andre Louf. So, big nerd alert over here. I read some pretty weird things.
Well, that's great. No, I absolutely love that stack. That makes you a fascinating person, and the beard and the glasses just take on so much more weight. See, I knew we were getting there. And as we talk about your book, and as we talk about kind of the pattern that you lay out for the spiritual formation of children, we'll talk a little bit more about that, but that'll actually come into play. Jenny, you had something to throw in there.
Oh, I'm laughing, not at you, Jared, but at the fact that my husband, Matt, is now so excited. He loves that, all those things you listed.
All those monkish old things. I like to say I read dead people. That's one of the things.
Well, and lately, fairly recently, probably within the last 6 months, when we did this little segment and we asked Matt what he was rocking, listening to, he had downloaded, and as he worked...
Yeah, I listened to Gregorian chants in the background. And let's just say that's not sweeping the nation, but I do it. So just know that. Just know that.
My girls have made fun of me numerous times because I've been known to rock some Gregorian chant myself.
Jared, smell it? Because I smell a friendship brewing. And my girl right here, Jenny, makes fun of me quite often. What I'll do is I'll gather the kids around. You know, we have these Sonos speakers where everybody can hear. And I'll just play it as though they want to listen to it. But they let me know very quickly that they don't.
I now know two people. Who've done that.
And that makes two of us. Jared, let's keep moving on. What you watching? Is there anything that you're watching by way of movies, film, TV shows maybe? You know, some people, you may say, you know, I did away with my TV and I live in a cave like the monks do. You know, that's fine. But if there's anything you're watching, anything you're enjoying, this is the time to just let us know.
Well, I did do away with my TV, but I love, love, love watching movies. And we do stream, like stuff from Netflix and that kind of thing. But we're currently kind of in between seasons. But this last season, I watched the new television series, The Series of Unfortunate Events, with my girls.
Yes,
That was we really enjoyed that. And I watch documentaries. I love documentaries. Just watched a documentary put out by the clothing company Patagonia.
Do you know the name of it?
It's called Big Jumbo, and it's about Jumbo Mountain in British Columbia, and just about the kind of history of the fight to either keep it wild or to develop it into a ski slope. Well, and really fascinating. Called Jumbo Wild. It's really good.
Well, I mean, now it's kind of getting awkward now because my
it really is.
Documentaries are like, I'm kind of a documentary fiend, so I will watch that tonight. I will stay up way too late, and I'm interested. I'm an easy sell on any documentary. Correct, Jenny?
It's correct. Early in our marriage, Jared, this is before like streaming, right? And we had to. He had heard of some.
Don't tell the young kids it was before streaming.
No.
You just sold us out.
It was he had read an article or some. I don't know how you people find out about these things, but it was a documentary and we like had to have it. And we used to live in Fort Worth, Texas, and we went all over Dallas and Fort Worth, the whole area, to all used bookstores.
Let me pause just to put some reality back into the story. I had seen it and wanted you to see it. That's why I was trying to find it.
Oh, you had seen parts of it at a conference or something.
I was trying to bring Jenny into the realm of the cultured. Keep going.
No, I mean, I like documentaries, but there's a different level of your passion.
Needless to say, the end of that story ends with she slept through the whole thing that
I
absolutely searched all over multiple triplexes to find.
But
she did not care one way or the other. It was called
The Stones of Summer.
Stone Reader is the name of the book. The documentary is
The Stones of Summer, right?
Other way around. Stone Reader is the name of the documentary around which it's a story of a book called The Stones of Summer by Dow Mossman. Good job, Jenny.
I got it.
But we're not here to talk about my problems. We're here to talk about yours, Jared. So last thing, you already talked about what you're rocking, and we already hit on that. Is there anything you're rocking other than the Gregorian chants these days? Anything you're listening to? Now, Jenny has taken this a different way. She thought when I said, what are you rocking? I meant, what are you wearing?
Like, so she told me about
a jean jacket. And I was like, no. When we say, what are you rocking? We mean in your earbuds. It could be a podcast. It could be music. It could be, you know, you may be a believer for for all I know. So who is it that you're listening to, enjoying, anything that that's floating your boat?
Yeah, you know, I'm listening. I've got a little playlist of John Mark McMillan going.
Okay. Yes, I'm familiar with him. Jitty's not. You're teaching her so many things.
No, this his album called Borderlands, I think, is phenomenal. It's really great. I'm actually not a huge. I'm actually a recovering. Like, I used to not listen to music. I spent like 6 years not listening to music, not on purpose, but. And then it's just been in the past 4 or 5 years, I've been trying to kind of regain my music steam. So okay. I got a lot of help from friends. And then the other recent listen, the Barr Brothers, I've been listening to. I just discovered them this week. Okay. Somebody posted something on Facebook. So the Barr Brothers.
What kind of music is the Barr Brothers? Is that kind of folksy, or am I wrong there?
Probably it's pretty interesting. Like the video I watched, I would say like folksy, like in the vein of like Avett Brothers, but
okay,
you know, people who are like really into music will probably think I'm like completely in left field here, but the video I watched of this concert was like they were playing like a bicycle wheel. I mean literally like percussion on a bicycle wheel. So okay. That was
pretty, I'm completely fascinated. And Jared, there's nothing wrong with left field. Left field's great. There's flowers in left field. There's no problems over there. We do want to segue and just talk about your book and why we kind of found you fascinating and why we wanted to bring you on. And I just want to kind of ask a series of questions. But the first open-ended question is just, would you tell us about your book, Imaginative Prayer, A Year-Long Guide for Your Child's Spiritual Formation, and just kind of the thesis and idea behind that book?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a book really written, it's really for parents. And one of the kind of stories I tell in the book is, you know, I'm a pastor, I'm a spiritual director, I teach spiritual direction, I've got 4 kids, and I realized somewhere along the way that I just felt really inadequate to the task of discipling and mentoring my own kids spiritually. And so it just began a journey for me to try to figure out how do I not, you know, think about raising my kids in the faith, maybe in the way that the church tradition I grew up in thought about it, which was, you know, let's pump our heads full of, you know, all the doctrine and all the Bible memory verses, all of which is really good. But, at the end of the day, you know, everything kind of fell apart for me. I had a faith crisis in my early 20s. Everything kind of fell apart. And that really, I think, boils down to the fact that I really didn't grasp the deep, wonderful love of God for me until I was probably in my early 30s. And I think that's what the whole story is about. So I begin to think about how can I help my kids kind of lean into this more experiential and what some would say contemplative posture in their life with God. And what came out of that is my book, Imaginative Prayer. So it's a 9-month guide really for parents to help journey alongside of their children through a series of imaginative prayers. I can say more about that. But then I also provide a throughout the week kind of question guide. And you know, most of parenting happens in the margins of life, going to the grocery store, you know, waiting in line at Chipotle, you know, doing the dishes together. And how do we kind of capture some of that time just for really thoughtful and helpful conversation regarding like how we're being formed spiritually and what our life with God looks like. So that's what my book is aiming to do.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we kind of wanted to hear more from you. So all of those things to me beg like 10 questions each. Contemplative, I want to ask questions. Imagination, I want to ask questions, and we'll get there. But just as you see parents kind of right here, and I just want to acknowledge, you know, not all of our listeners are parents, and boy, Jared, do we have thousands as far as you know.
So many.
And so, but not everybody that comes to this is a parent. So one question that I had for you is just, if I'm listening this today, what piece of it, what is it that would keep me around and listening, or what do I have to learn? Maybe say if I'm not a parent, and then we are going to dive in for the next few bits for actual parents.
Yeah, man, that's an amazing question, particularly for me as a pastor. You know, even if you're not a parent, the reality is that you'll probably at some point in your life serve the role of parenting in a child's life. I mean, there's a ton of children out there that don't have parents that are really engaged, period. And a lot of parents, even if they're engaged in things like, you know, t-ball or, you know, volleyball, they may not be engaged spiritually in the life of their kid. And so I think that as a church community, those of us that find ourselves in church communities, I think single people or married people without kids, I think the kids who are around you are kids that you can invest in and mentor. And my book is also, you know, I give some language to that in the book where, you know, maybe it's not a parent leading a child through these exercises, but maybe it's just like a mentor or a tutor, if you will.
Well, I love that because as I watch my kids grow, I mean, I pray that there would be voices outside of Jenny's and mine in their life that would push them to Christ. And so that certainly is something that I want folks to hear. You know, I want third voices in my children's life. And we certainly attend a school where it would be a primary voice if somebody entered into that. So I love that. You know, as we continue, just before we kind of get granular, and I do, but as we kind of hover here at 10,000 feet and we think about parenting, and just for Jenny and I, second, third, and fourth grader, and it's wild, and they got to get to soccer, and we just got back to school, and we feel like the rhythm is like constantly like, hey, guys, you got to hurry up to get to your soccer practice. I don't really care if you're late. Hey, guys, eat the meal. We got to take the bath, brush the teeth. That's just kind of where we're at. But what do we as parents need to really think about in terms of our kids' spirituality? How is it that you would frame what we as parents really need to be keeping in forefront of our mind as we think about their relationship with the Father in the wildness of the daily life? How would you encourage us to think on that?
Oh, yeah, man, that's a big question. That's a long, long conversation. But just to let you know is that my life looks just like that as a parent, you know. I mean, there were tears in our house at 8:15 this morning as I tried to get my girls out the door. So I think that for any parent, that kind of thing is never going to go away. That's just part of what it is. But I do think that one of the things that we can be attentive to is creating a spaciousness in places where you know, maybe we're not in a hurry. Like if we can kind of dial back a little bit. I mean, the reality is that most Americans live at a pace of life that is just not sustainable. And so one of the things that we've tried to get really serious about is practicing Sabbath and rest and creating spaces where we all get to be bored. I think it's really healthy. And because it's in that margin that we create in our lives that I think a lot of the good work of parenting happens. Because if we're always in a hurry, if we're always, you know, on the go, then I think we're just breeding the same kind of anxiety that perpetuates our culture.
Jared, sorry, a little lag there.
My gosh, I don't know what happened. I think she took a nap on us. I'm pointing at her the whole time. I'll cut this out where I tell Jenny to up your game, Jen. Come on, get in that microphone. Let's go.
The fact that he edits is my favorite thing. It's the only way I can get in here.
Yeah, but I never edit out anything I don't want to, like this right here.
I know. I think when you talk about dialing it back and creating spaces to be bored, that is so challenging today for parents and for so many reasons and in so many ways. And I'm so drawn to that. And as I looked at some of your book, I was really drawn to this whole importance of imagination. And you stress that importance of the imagination in the pursuit of God. And I, you know, obviously you'll be able to articulate, but I was so drawn to it. Knowing my kids, knowing how they think, also with the backdrop of like my desire for them. And we tell them this all the time. We talk to them about how we desire all these things for them. But if they but we know that if they would follow Christ, then everything else falls under that, you know, like, because he's taking care of them and he loves them. And, but it's one thing to just kind of say that every night, but it's another thing to stress this importance of imagination in the pursuit of God. And will you explain to us what you mean by that?
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things that's come to my mind, and I don't know if I've ever really articulated it this way before, but we really live through our imagination. So even if I'm going to go to the grocery store, like what pops into my mind is, okay, like I imagine myself going to the grocery store, or like if I need to get a gallon of milk, like what pops into my mind is a gallon of milk or the empty milk in the fridge. And I think that even as kids think about their future, or they hear us, you know, say something about, you know, what's important in life, what comes into their mind often is an image or a picture of that thing. So I think part of what we need to do is to help craft our language and our explanation of how the world works and how our life with God works with this kind of imaginative picture of like Jesus being there with us. So, you know, I've got one girl that from time to time, she can struggle with some anxiety. She feels anxious. And, you know, oftentimes what I'm, you know, trying to help her see, which is the reality, is that actually like Jesus is right there with her, you know, through the power of the Holy Spirit, that God is in the room with her. And so to get her to kind of get her imagination around the idea that she's surrounded by the great love and kindness of God for her, is one of the things that I've been trying to do to help her be more aware of how to like navigate even just this, you know, everyday problem of like, hey, I feel anxious today, you know? So, and I think that part of what I'm trying to do with imaginative prayer, and I didn't invent this way of praying. This has been around for, you know, hundreds of years, thousands even, is that when we put ourselves in imaginatively in a space where God is present, we do that through scripture in some ways, where we put ourselves into the story, where we may, you know, receive sight from the touch of Jesus as though we were the ones that were blind. It creates this kind of memory of experience for us. And that's what I'm trying to introduce both parents and children into, is that we can actually experience God through our imagination, and trust that even when we don't fully understand what's happening there, that somehow it's shifting the way we posture ourselves before God or view God.
Well, you know, one of the things, and this speaks to the community that we traffic in a little bit, and that is, I think of, and I saw a video of one of your samples where you were reading the imaginative prayer and having the kids close their eyes, and we can talk more about that in a minute. But so our daughter, that has significant disability, one of the main things that impacts her is autism. And so for a lot of things to help her through her day and through her life, we have what's called a visual schedule or a tangible schedule, so that when I'm teaching her to wash her hands, there is a visual chart right in front of her so that she can picture what it's like to wash her hands. And that's something that's so familiar to me. And a lot of us just go through, right? And we just wash our hands and we just go on, and we don't think about the steps that it takes, you know, for someone who learns differently to learn in that way. And so I just immediately, when I saw the video of you speaking to the group of kids, it was just like a sample of one of the parts of your book. It immediately made me think of that, of how, you know, because Lena, our daughter, learns differently, she needs these different things. And I just love the idea that these are kids, you know, kids are imaginative. Like you said, they picture what you say. And I just love that whole approach.
Jared, you know, as you talk through the story of your child and trying to get her to imagine, use her imagination to the realization that God is with her, and as Jenny kind of referred to as well, how is it that you do that in a group setting? How do you take that type of use of your imagination and do that with a group setting? Because I know that your book lays that out as well. It's not just conversations on the side with your kiddos, but also could be done in a group setting as well.
Yeah, that's right. This project actually originally started as a curriculum in a church. And it began as a way for, I was trying to kind of reimagine the catechism process. You know, a lot of churches have this process of catechism where they're teaching, you know, doctrine or this is what we believe. And so I was trying to figure out a way, how do I help, you know, the kids in our church understand like what this kingdom of God project is really all about? What is life with God really all about at the end of the day? And so what these imaginative prayers do is each one has basically a theme. In fact, there's like six major themes throughout the book: God's love, our love for others, forgiveness, Jesus becoming king, the mission of God. And so what the imaginative prayer does in a group setting is first of all, gives everyone kind of this shared, dialed down experience where we sit quietly as we head into this imaginative prayer. And then it's through leading them through an imaginative prayer. So for example, there's one session where the prayer is written that enables the kids to imagine getting lost in the woods, and it becomes dark and they have to find shelter underneath a tree. And in fact, they were with 99 other kids, and yet they somehow found that they were lost. And so I'm borrowing kind of from this idea of Jesus going after the one lost sheep. And the way the imaginative prayer unfolds is that, in fact, you know, in the middle of the night when it's dark and cold and wet, Jesus reaches down underneath the tree and gathers them up. And it turns out that all the 99 other kids were, in fact, looking for this one lost child. So I'm trying to give the kid an experience of lostness, of what it feels like to be lost, and then what it feels like to be found by Jesus. And then from the theological perspective, what we're then unpacking for the kid, at least giving them an experience of, is in fact that God loves them so much that when they're lost, that God will come looking for them. So the hope is that forms the picture, Jenny, like just like what you talk about, that for your daughter, the picture of washing hands serves as this kind of signpost, a reminder of what it means to wash your hands. And in the same way, these imaginative prayers serve as a signpost of what it means that God is deeply and radically in love with us.
And so, Jared, let me play naysayer for just a bit, because I want to introduce you to Anders, who is my, how old is he? I've already gotten one age wrong today.
I want to hear you know.
Believe he is a wonderful seven-year-old boy.
He's seven.
Woo! Congratulations. There you go.
Hey, 50% of my kids' ages today. I missed one earlier before we started recording, if you're wondering what the heck we're talking about. But, here, you know, it's you've got four daughters, Jared. And so I have two, and they're both wonderful, and they're both capable, even Lena, of sitting still and quiet. And I can see them imaginative praying. Is that a verb? And but then there's Anders, and Anders represents another contingent of folks who you know, they don't sit still quite easily, and the imagination might be there, but the ability to sit still. So how do you kind of two naysayer questions? How do you set the table for the experience of children when we've all seen what 10 children together can sometimes become and look like? How do you deal with that? And I know you've got thoughts on that. And then naysayer question number two, for you to take just boom in order, is I know you've got a group of folks that hear this and think, you know, whatever, like we've got to teach them scripture. And I hear you continuing to put importance on that. We've got to teach them doctrine. I hear you putting importance on that, but I know there's got to be a contingent of folks who hear this and think, what a bunch of mumbo jumbo, imaginative prayer, whatever, you know, we've got to teach these kids the 5 points of this, that, or the other, depending on what faith tradition they're in. And so there you go. Matt the Naysayer serving it up for you just to knock it out of the park, Jared.
That sounds great. Yeah. Yeah. Well, neither of those are real softballs, but let me see if I can go for it.
I don't tend to lob it up too terribly easy.
Yeah, that's fine. No, you know, I think those are actually really great questions, and I hear those questions a lot. The first one, you know, I mean, there is some degree. The reality is that, yeah, different personalities are going to experience this differently. However, one of the things that I really believe and I guess I want to really advocate for is that I don't know one child that comes into a math class and like immediately is like, oh man, totally, like give me like 10 worksheets. I'm ready for this. I mean, we in every area of our life are helping our children acclimate to the things that are good for them. And so, you know, I got a 6-year-old that, I mean, I'm telling you, if I never watched her brush her teeth, I don't think she ever would. you know, we got her like this little fancy toothbrush that like it's got a green light, a red light, and a yellow light, and she pushes the button, and as long as that thing is lighting up green, she's supposed to be brushing, and it helps her. It just helps her, right? It's like a life hack for her. I think that.
Like, hey, Jared, where do we get that real fast? Is there like a link or something? Because Jenny kind of struggles with brushing her teeth.
Oh, that's
just kidding.
Well, there you go.
We do live in Arkansas, Jared. I mean,
I'll let you guys sort that out.
It's kind of a problem here in the state, the teeth brushing. Continue on, though.
So all that to say is that I do think that, of course, personality is going to be different. But I do think that there are ways that we can teach really everybody a process of what it means to kind of slow down, to quiet. And it's gonna take longer for some kids to learn that than it is gonna be for other kids. And I've seen that flesh out in the life of our community and life of our church. Some people really gravitate towards this kind of thing, but most people don't. And the same is true of adults. You know, we haven't talked much about just the adult portion of my book, but even adults who try to sit quietly, any adult I've ever met who's tried to sit quietly for even 6 or 8 minutes will find that it's nearly impossible at first. But when you practice, and this is a principle kind of in the contemplative stream, is that when you practice that quieting process or some sort of centering prayer for the long haul, what you find is that you actually become acclimated to it. And even, you know, one of my like little areas of study is kind of the neurology of our brains even becomes like our brain changes when we practice a habit. So I think I would say to your first point is that yes, like most kids are not going to be naturally acclimated to the kind of thing that I'm putting out there in this book. But I think in the long run, their bodies, their brains, their demeanor can be kind of trained towards at least trying it. And I think any effort in this direction is going to be beneficial in the long run. Your second question about kind of, you know, doctrine and theology. I think anybody who actually really digs into my book will see that it's actually pretty theologically and doctrinally driven. I put a ton of thought and research, and a lot of the footnotes are from like theology books. But I think that, you know, one of the biggest impacts for me has been an author. He's a philosopher at Calvin College. His name is James K.A. Smith. One of his more popular books is called You Are What You Love. And he talks about pedagogy, like how we learn things. And he does a great job of articulating that we think we learn things based upon putting information in our brain. But what he shows, both philosophically and experientially, is that we learn things through our desires, through the things that we love. And those come out of experiences. So, Matt, earlier you and I were talking about kind of a shared love for, you know, the mountains or beards, for example.
Just for example.
So, If you hike a mountain that I've never hiked, but I have hiked a mountain before. Somehow we still have this shared experience of what it feels like to be, you know, on top of a 14,000 foot peak. This is kind of how we learn, is that we learn through experience. And so while I think doctrine is super important, I think developmentally, up until the age of about 20, I think, if we can get an experience of God into the life of our kids and our teenagers, it will better prepare them for the doctrine that they learn a little bit later. Not that we shouldn't teach it, you know, as we go, but you know, when I went through a crisis of faith, the thing that brought me back to faith wasn't, you know, doctrine. It was that I finally realized and had the experience of God's love for me. So I think it needs to be a both and. I think it needs to be the experience of God, and I think we do need to be teaching doctrine. I just think we need to rethink how we're structuring our kind of educational process in the church to help to kind of facilitate how we actually learn.
See, I think you did knock him out of the park. Well played. Well played. Jared, when you say, if I'm hearing this today and the whole idea, you know, you and I discussed our shared affinity for the monks and for all sorts of things that maybe not everybody brings to the table as they hear this. So when you say just kind of this way of living and learning, whether you're an adult and you're growing in your faith, right now here today, or we're thinking about teaching our children, and you talk about it being rooted in Ignatian spirituality. I wondered if you would just to kind of unpack that a little bit for someone who that is new to.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great, that's a really great question. And one of the things I'll share in the introduction is a little bit the story of St. Ignatius of Loyola, who really popularized this concept of an imaginative prayer through the spiritual exercises that he put his colleagues through as they came into the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits. And it came out of an experience that Ignatius himself had during his conversion. This guy's he's like in his 20s, and what he really wants in life is he wants the girls and he wants the fame, but he gets injured. And he's lying in bed, and he picks up two books. One is on the lives of the saints, and one is this book by Rudolf of Saxony called The Life of Christ. And he basically found himself 10 months in bed, and when he imagined his life, getting the girl and winning the war and becoming rich, he realized that, man, that kind of life actually isn't nearly as exciting as, what I'm reading about in St. Francis. And so he began to imagine his life. What if I lived like St. Francis and gave away my money to the poor and served people and kissed lepers and all that kind of crazy stuff that you see in the life of St. Francis? He found that he actually came alive on the inside. And this was the bedrock of what he later developed is a series of exercises where we get led in the spiritual exercises through the life of Christ, through some of the scenes that we find in the New Testament, and we imagine ourselves into the story. You know, so for example, you've got the blind beggar on the side of the road who cries out, "Rabbi, Rabbi, you know, Son of David, have mercy on me." What Ignatius would have us do is he would say, imagine that you are that beggar. And then that imaginative exercise becomes a prayer where we are asking God to kind of reach into that experience and to allow us to experience Jesus firsthand. And that's really the kind of the heart of imaginative prayer in Ignatian spirituality. And I basically borrowed that and tried to recontextualize it and translate it for children and their mentors.
Well, I'm so glad that you did. For one, I've kind of been on about a 3 to 5 year journey of kind of learning more about kind of historical faith practices. And I've been kind of coming to Jenny, who's not reading these nerdish books that you love and that I'm kind of reading. And, you know, I've kind of told her, we've actually had this conversation where I'm like, this would be a great way to lead your family. Like, there's this kind of these rules, there's kind of these practices, and there's just some really good things that I want to apply to your family. So when I saw your book, anyway, of kind of, I think so often the idea of a contemplative faith or practices can be a very individualistic thing sometimes for us. So we take that and we may do it, but Jenny and I may not interact with it at all together. And so what I really loved is you kind of brought the idea of some of these practices that have meant so much to me and my own faith over the last few years, whether it be the examine kind of the daily prayer of looking back over your day and seeing where God was present in your day. So taking some of these practices and taking some of these ideas and doing it as a family was really kind of why we sought you out, why we wanted to have you. So I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, for taking the time to write a book about this is important, engaging our kids' imagination, being intentional with their spiritual formation. I just want to say, you know, thanks. We're certainly excited to think through this and how we could incorporate some of this into our own family. And I hope other folks will be encouraged as well. Jenny, do you have anything to throw in?
No, I'm. It's true. He has mentioned this over the last few years. As he has read some of these things, he would say, "Gosh, there's got to be a way that we could implement some of these things with our kids and with our family." So, when we learned of your book, we're like, "Oh, this is what we've kind of been talking about." So we're really excited to look further into it, and we appreciate you sharing with us today, Jared.
Yes, I really appreciate it. I mean, it sounds very similar to my journey where I just discovered like some of these like just more ancient practices, and it just helped me. I think it just helped me fall in love with Jesus, honestly, at the end of the day. You know, for whatever naysaying can happen when we talk about these kinds of streams of faith, the reality is that I'm just more in love with Jesus now than I was 3 or 4 years ago, for sure. And I think it's been through that process of slowing down and spending this really kind of leisurely time in these kind of exercises. So sounds like a very similar journey.
Well, I think that's a difficult thing to naysay. If you have found yourself more in love with Jesus, I say that's kind of the idea. So again, thank you for the time, and we appreciate you.
Yeah. Blessings to you guys. Thank you.
Well, thank you to Jared Patrick Boyd. I really enjoyed our conversation. I know that Jenny enjoyed it as well. Thank you for following along. We've got a little bit different format that we'll be telling you about, whereby we plan on doing an interview a month as well as 2 Matt Chats a month. We're going to see how that goes. Stay with it. It's liable to change. But as for now, that's the way that we plan on going. Thank you guys for all of the feedback, for what you've enjoyed and letting us know. We always appreciate hearing from you. As always, you can find show notes and links about all the books and the movies and the music and maybe even some Gregorian chants at theatypicallife.com. We love you. Have a good week. This week, Jenny and I sit down with Jared Patrick Boyd, the author of Imaginative Blip, blip, bidoo, bee, baba. This week, Jenny and I sit down with Jenny. Dup, hey, yeah. Take 97.